Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on March 10th, 2020. This is the eighth week of our 12-week Truth of Happiness Dhamma study. This week's study is on dependent origination. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So we are in week eight, I think, is that right? I can't remember. We're in the middle of this thing, Truth to Happiness Dhamma study. We began just looking at the jhana meditation method, how to do it. And then we looked at the four foundations of mindfulness, which is the Buddha's instructions. The beginning part of the Satipatthana Sutta is instructions for what to do during meditation. As we're being mindful of our breath and feelings and thoughts are arising and passing away, what to do with it. And then to recognize the present quality of our mind in relation to our Dhamma practice. Then we looked at the context for the Buddha's entire teaching career, Four Noble Truths. And then we looked at the fourth noble truth, the truth of the path, of the Eightfold Path, leading to the cessation of ignorance of self in relation to the world the self lives in. And that was what we studied last week. The anatta, or wrong views of self, creating stress and suffering for itself based on that misunderstanding of what constitutes a human being in this human world, in the human universe. And it's because of a misunderstanding of self in relationship to the world that we all live in that we create stress and suffering. That lack of understanding is called ignorance. The Buddha awakened to that fact that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that leads to all manner of greed, aversion, and ongoing deluded thinking. And so that is the focus. That's what the Buddha awakened to. It's his great breakthrough of understanding as described in the Nagara Sutta. And so that's what he taught, is to how to develop an understanding and a direct abandonment of that ignorance, to recognize it and abandon. That's what the Eightfold Path is for, and the overarching structure of the Four Noble Truths develops that. And so we're going to spend two classes on dependent origination, and then two classes next week on the five clinging aggregates. Because if you look at the progression of the course, and I think I talked a little bit about this last week, about why the course is structured the way it is, and I went back and forth between this paragraph, this chapter should be here and there. And I decided on this, and placing dependent origination here specifically for a reason. Rather than, even though it's what the Buddha awakened to, the may lead to thinking, well, I should teach this first. But the Buddha didn't teach this first. In other words, dependent origination is not the first thing the Buddha ever taught. And I wondered about that. Why didn't he start at the beginning for him, for the beginning of his understanding? And I realized it's simply because there's not enough context to understand it. It's to teach dependent origination as is presented in the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta, the primary sutta on dependent origination, would have almost no meaning because there's no other context for it. So in the study, we've looked at the context that dependent origination is applied to, and it follows directly last week, looking at what is a self and why is a self rooted in ignorance. And so this now explains what happens because of that ignorance. And basically what dependent origination says is from an ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And Four Noble Truths simply describes the reality of human life in this impermanent world and a path to understanding that, the Eightfold Path. And the five clinging aggregates describe the ongoing personal experience of ignorance. So does everybody see where we're going with this and why it follows this way? Everybody got, or am I being too obtuse about it?
Yes.
So now we're going to understand what we did to ourselves. This week, two key understandings will be developed. The five clinging aggregates and dependent origination. Sometimes dependent origination is called dependent co-arising, and I'll touch on a little bit more of this. And it's almost always called dependent origination, and then there's a slash, and the word interdependence is thrown in there. But when you look at those two words, there's no relationship between dependent and interdependent, two different things. sometimes dependent origination is called interconnectedness. Again, look at the even just the title and then what it means. Dependent and interconnected are two different things, aren't they? Completely. And one of the most popular phrases used to mask ignorance of dependent origination. I'm using that phrase specifically because the term is used almost as a magic trick. Don't look at what dependent origination really says. Look at what I say it is, because then that justifies this whole particular dharma that follows from that. And that is interbeing, which is the most, can't even think of the right word. It's the most misleading term in all of those, interdependent, interconnectedness, and interbeing, because it implies, and it's what is taught, is that I'm a part of you, you're a part of me. I'm a part of the tree is a part of me. I'm a part of the frogs are a part of me. In some way, and you can stretch science to the, not even stretch science, you can take science to the point and prove that there's components of me in you, via our physical makeup, the same way there's a part of me in a tree or a frog or a star. That's true, but they're not noble truths. It's the same as saying in relation to the Dhamma that the sky is blue. So the fact that there's physical components that are common to all things that are alive has nothing at all to do with the Dhamma, and it doesn't imply interdependence, interconnectedness, and certainly not interbeing as a Dhamma practice. You can make a scientific statement to say, yes, there's parts of us in all of us. And if you want to say that because the same basic cell that's in me is in a frog, well, we're connected that way, okay. But think about that for a moment. Does that have any meaning to reality? Does it? Does it help me at all to understand who I am in relation to the world, to know that we're all made up of cells and some cells are common? No, it doesn't. It's true. It's true in the world we live in, but it's not a noble truth, and it doesn't relate to the Dhamma. Dependent origination describes what the Buddha awakened to. It describes the problem that we're dealing with. So anytime we change it or alter it, we know that we're doing it to fit a fabricated Dharma, and that's just what has happened. When you look at, if you did a Google search on dependent origination, and in fact, you should all do it, you'd be surprised about what you get. Including one from the teacher that I just mentioned. And he does a chalk talk on a blackboard describing interbeing and calling it dependent origination. And when you look at it, it has no resemblance at all to what the Buddha taught. And the reason why I'm emphasizing this is the key point. It is because of a misunderstanding and misapplication of the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta that all of modern Buddhism fell off the rails. And it's necessary when you understand what it says. You cannot accept dependent origination as a foundation for your practice and come up with any type of magical or mystical or fabricated or speculative belief. The Buddha's teachings on what constitutes the mental physical form that appears to be the self and the environment necessary for not self or the ego self to arise. That's what the misapplications of dependent origination are developed for. The five clinging aggregates are the impermanent components that through clinging cause the appearance of an individual form. Is that clear? For I read that pretty quick. The five clinging aggregates are the impermanent components that through clinging cause the appearance of an individual form. The five clinging aggregates are form, feelings, perceptions, mental fabrications, and consciousness. You remember consciousness from the sixth property person. The four elements, earth, wind, fire, and water, the fifth property of the space property, and the sixth property of consciousness. But it's consciousness rooted in ignorance of four noble truths in both cases. It's not some grand cosmic consciousness or some type of ignorance-based consciousness that somehow has a remnant of wisdom within it. It doesn't. And that relates to, again, the misunderstanding of dependent origination, which leads to this idea that there's something within me that is awakened. There's a Buddha nature or a Buddhahood or a ground of being. These are all things that relate to something inherently awakened within a human being. But think about that. If a human being was inherently awakened, as described by the Buddha, how did that awakened person get so unawakened, get so screwed up, become woke, as it were, today? How did it happen? Well, it didn't happen. We didn't progress from someone who was once awakened, living an awakened life, to somehow falling into this pit of ignorance. How do we know that? How do we know that's not what happened? All we have to do is look at ourselves and look at the life we're living. If there was any shred of understanding in that, our minds couldn't have gotten so deluded, could they? But it's because of this impulsive and compulsive need to ignore my own ignorance that I continue it. And I continue it by clinging together this thing that I think is a form, me, this physical form, taking my feelings personally and using that personalization of my feelings, of impermanent feeling, fading and arising and passing away, to further give validity to this view I have of myself that's causing perceptions based on that original ignorance, leading to a fabricated way of living in the world that is rooted in that fifth form, that fifth aggregate of consciousness, excuse me. So, form, feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness. Does everybody see that as parts of you, as what constitutes a human being? You may, right now in your mind, you might say, yeah, but I'm much more than that. But you agree at least that the five clinging aggregates are part of your being? Yes, no?
Yes.
Everybody can see it, and it's rather simple. We can see the form. We know we have feelings. We know we create perceptions from those feelings, and we know we create mental fabrications based on those perceptions. And we know, of course, that there's a type of consciousness, a way of thinking, that's clinging this whole thing together. Well, the Buddha's Dhamma addresses the problem of ignorance where the problem arises, within this thing called five clinging aggregates, within form, within our perceptions, within our fabrications, right within our feelings. We take that to the fore every time we meditate. And as we continue to develop the Dhamma, or applying the Dhamma directly where stress and suffering, where confusion, delusion are present, within the five clinging aggregates. Remember that the five clinging aggregates are simply a name given to something. And the reason why I'm saying that is because it's a foreign term, we can get really messed up on what it means and start grasping after a meaning that doesn't need to be grasped after. Everybody here knows what feelings are, what perceptions are, what fabrications are, what feelings are, and what consciousness rooted in ignorance is. And to understand this in relation to the Dhamma is just to say, that's me, as it applies to the Dhamma. It may not be you as you're engaging, you may not be able to see it in your moment-by-moment life because it's really not all that important. But as Dhamma practitioners, it's important to see this when this arises. When in this moment I find that I'm agitated or distracted, and I take one breath, I can easily identify what is it that's causing this. It's a reaction to something that's threatening this form or something that I think this form needs. Or it's a feeling that arose that triggered something. Or it's a perception that arose that's rooted in conditioned thinking that leads to a fabrication. And all of those four components are constantly feeding the fifth aggregate of consciousness. So now dependent origination starts taking my attention away from the five clinging aggregates. This is me. I need to always be taking care of this thing, this five clinging aggregates. It slows it down a little bit. It starts calming the way that we're thinking, that fifth component of consciousness. And it's slowing it down just enough. Another way for slowing it down is concentration, is jhana. It's slowing down this internal process just enough so I can see what I'm doing to myself. And what I'm doing to myself is rooted in ignorance, and it leads to suffering. And continue. Dependent origination describes the 12 causative links that are the actions, or if karma means actions, are the actions or karma unfolding that occur as the environment for phenomena of the self to arise. And the only reason I really threw that in is to lead into our next week's study, which is on karma and rebirth. And just to touch on that briefly, if we want to know what our karma is, take a look at the mirror. A karma is present moment unfolding of past intentional actions moderated by the present level of mindfulness. What does that mean? Karma is not something, is not part of this grand universal system of reward and punishment to try and keep us in line. That's not karma. Karma is not some grand system of behavior modification overseen by some godlike creature pulling strings to bring us pain to teach us something about ourselves. That's what the Dhamma does. The Dhamma teaches us about ourselves without any pain, without any fabricated view of karma. That's not what karma means. Karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional actions moderated by present level of mindfulness, which means, and this is the key to the Dhamma, it's a key to understanding dependent origination and everything else. What I hold in mind in this moment determines my experience of it. That's karma. And if what I'm holding in mind is still rooted in ignorance, my karma is to only continue ignorance. If what I'm holding in mind is developed through the Eightfold Path, is well concentrated and well framed by the Eightfold Path, then this moment, my mind is inclined towards awakening. It's inclined towards the cessation of karma, the cessation of paying for my actions in ignorance. And as soon as my mind starts changing from a mind rooted in ignorance to a mind that is rooted in the wisdom of the Eightfold Path, my karma begins to diminish. But that's not even the goal. In other words, ending karma is not the goal. Because developing the Dhamma to its culmination brings all karma to cessation. Developing the Dhamma to cessation brings all karma to cessation. That's an important point that I'll touch on again in 2 weeks. But just to make the point that karma, again, is not some grand system of behavior modification or reward and punishment. In other words, if I did a few things that were less than wholesome in this life, it doesn't mean that I have to suffer in accordance with those wrong deeds in order to work through my karma. That's pure nonsense. It applies a permanence to something, doesn't it? That one idea, that fabricated idea that has grown into a pop culture rendition of what karma is, reward and punishment, is simply rooted in ignorance. How could it be? It implies a permanence where the Buddha teaches and we understand that everything is impermanent, including the results of past actions. The best example of that is the story of Angulimala, but there's hundreds of them in the Sutta Pitaka. Angulimala was a murderer, killed 99 people, was planning on 100, and saw the Buddha walking down the road. And he said, that's going to be number 100. And so he tried to, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but maybe in a couple of weeks. He wanted to kill the Buddha. He met the Buddha on the road. The Buddha gave him a Dhamma teaching, and Angulimala never killed anyone again. He was a bloodthirsty murderer. Never harmed another soul. And as the story continues, you find out that that Angulimala awakened on the spot and died an awakened human being. He didn't have to suffer 99 deaths because he killed 99 other people. All that he had to do to end all of that pain and suffering within himself and anybody he might continue to harm in the future was to awaken. And every shred, every impotence for pain and suffering that Angulimala could give to himself or others was gone in that instant. That's why I say constantly, if we really care for the people in this world, for ourselves and all other living beings, we'll take to the Dhamma and awaken, and we stop being Angulimalas ourselves. I'm going to continue. We're going to get through this. As all dukkha originates from the 12 links of dependent origination, we will start right there. Metaphorically, the 5 clinging aggregates are the vehicle of an ego self, and dependent origination is the factory where the vehicle takes shape and the environment the vehicle travels. In other words, we do this to ourselves. The importance of these teachings is to understand the origination of all views of self and clinging, meaning ignorance, to experience and disassembling or unbinding this vehicle of the ego personality. In the, we're not going to do the whole thing here, but in the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta, the Buddha describes in sequence how from ignorance through 12 observable links, we end up as suffering. And then he reverses that and takes us from that point of suffering backwards through the 12 observable links and ending in wisdom in an awakened human being. Which is, and so he's teaching us that we can undo this process that we started ourselves rooted in ignorance. And a person might ask, a reasonable person might ask, well, where did ignorance come from? And you're gone. You've lost your mind again. It doesn't matter where ignorance came from, does it? And if you think a little bit, it's a bit subtle to formulate that question and why did I do it? But if you think a little bit about where that question comes from, it's rooted in eye-making, isn't it? It's rooted in ignorance. What I need to know to practice the Buddha's Dhamma is I'm ignorant, but it's a very specific ignorance. Excuse me. Dependent origination tells us that this very specific ignorance is simply ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And that immediately focuses our Dhamma practice. When you understand, I mean, what I said earlier, that this one sutta, this one understanding, dependent origination, had to have been corrupted to end up where we are with modern Buddhism and all the other kind of spiritual philosophies that say they're Buddhist-based. It's because of that. You can't start from a statement, a clear statement that says, from ignorance of Four Noble Truths, all manner of suffering arises, and then start praying to Avalokiteshvara or doing 108,000 bows or visualizing a flower as your Dhamma practice. Because none of it relates to developing wisdom where there was once ignorance, does it? But when we start from where the Buddha starts and where he asks us to start with dependent origination, we always have our direction. And if you want to understand, if you're confused or maybe trying to marry two Dharma practice and what the Buddha taught, use dependent origination in the Four Noble Truths as the framework. Does it fit or does it lead to a developing understanding of dependent origination or Four Noble Truths? And if it doesn't, if it can't fit into these two teachings, it's not something the Buddha taught, because everything the Buddha taught was taught in this context. And the reason why I emphasize that over and over again is because this focuses our Dhamma practice. In this moment, when I'm sitting here in meditation, and I'm distracted, and I'm uncomfortable, and I don't want to be sitting here in this moment, but then I remind myself, wait a minute, I'm doing this because I want wisdom where there was once ignorance. I want to understand who I am in relation to the world I live in. I want to make each moment in my life meaningful. I want to make each moment in my life meaningful. I don't want to have to manufacture meaning in my life anymore by grasping and clinging, do I? I don't want to have to manufacture meaning in my life to needing a 70-inch TV where a 55-inch was doing okay. Again, I'm using a silly example. But when I get the idea that 70-inch TV is going to make a difference, I can't sleep till I get to Best Buy, can I? Till I get that TV and I put it in front of me. And for 3 minutes, all is good in the world. And then I see an 80-inch TV. No more sleeping for me. We are constantly rooted in craving after 80-inch TVs because our minds are ignorant. Does everybody see that? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Did I need a bigger TV to be happy? Or, and again, a silly example. But anything we decide that we need to be happy in this moment, I need to add to myself, the underlying view is that there's something missing in me. That's a wrong view of self. That's a wrong view of self. How could there be something missing from me? Take a look. There's still the four elements. There's still the space property. And I still got those wheels turning. There's nothing missing. And if I realize there's nothing missing, then I can stop looking. And then each and every moment in my life is meaningful because I don't need myself to be any different than it is right now. Does everybody get that? I don't need myself in this moment to be any different. That's a completely different view that is rooted in interdependence, interconnectedness, and interbeing, or dependence, dependent origination. Because if I'm interconnected, I need everything in the world, in the universe, to continue to revolve around me in a way that I need it to be. And of course, it never can it? And so I'm always disappointed. I'm always grasping after something. I'm always distracted about the next thing that I need to get or the next thing that I need to happen. And so I'm constantly manipulating this moment in my life. I'm constantly I-making. Unless I understand the process that I'm doing to myself. And the difference, I think I'm going to stop here. The difference between an unawakened human being and a person who is awakening in the process of it is just that. An awakening human being keeps bringing themselves through the skills we've developed, keeps bringing themselves back into the present moment. And eventually we get to the point where we simply stay there. How do we do that? How do we get to the point where we can stay in the present moment? Does anybody have an idea about how that works? The ultimate expression of awakening, being able to be mindfully present with life as life occurs without ever losing our body? How does that happen? Finally.
Take a breath.
A little bit more.
You don't latch onto your thoughts.
We take a breath and we make a decision to stay here. And it really is, I don't mean to minimize it, and I don't mean to be silly about it. We really, but that decision can only be made from a mind that understands that it can make that, that I can make a choice, that I have gained. This is the profoundness of the statement the Buddha made in the Vitakasanthana Sutta. We gain the ability to think what we want to think when we want to think it. Meaning every single thought that I have is an appropriate thought in relation to what's occurring. And so that thought in this moment might be jubilation at a beautiful sunset. Or it might be great sadness over the loss of a loved one. It might even be reasonable concern when I hear about a new virus floating around the world. But that mind will always be resting in equanimity, no matter what's occurring. That mind will always be present for life as life occurs. And then each moment is a meaningful moment. That's tonight's talk on dependent origination. We're going to have another talk on this, and I'm going to get into a little bit. I'm saying this, that I know many of you are busy and you can't always listen to both talks, but try to listen to Saturday's talk because it'll put a little capper on this. And then we'll get into five clinging aggregates next week. All right. Let's go online and see what Karen has to say. How are you, Karen?
Hello.
Hey, Karen.
Hi, how are you all?
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How are you? What did you think of tonight's talk?
Oh, I just so totally enjoyed it. And I am, again, my head is spinning, but I loved listening to everything you had to say, and I'm just going to continue to listen. Thank you.
Glad you joined us, Karen. Hi, Jane.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I just love when you say that there's, you know, I'm fine just the way I am. I don't need anything.
Yeah.
You know, I have, so.
That's pretty good, isn't it? That's worth the price of admission, too.
It sure is.
It really is. You know, I'm at peace. That's what that means. I'm at peace in this moment. I don't need anything to be any different than it is. I'm glad you joined us, Jane. Hello, Thad.
Hello, John. I'm just going to listen tonight, too. I've been a little under the weather last few days, so just listen tonight. Thank you.
I'm glad you joined us. I hope you feel better soon. Hello, Anna.
Hi. Sorry. I was just listening to what Thad was saying. I wish I could, like, miniaturize you and put in my pocket and take it with me everywhere.
No. Yeah, but I don't want to live in your pocket.
No, I know, but every time I lose focus or I try to catch myself, I take a breath and I remember your words. And at the same time, I know that your words are just words. And yet they're profound. And if I get kind of lost in topsy-turvy of stuff in life and everything else going around, I just try to be mindful of what you say, even though I'm aware of all these crazy thoughts going around and mundane stuff that requires me to be a mom or a wife or whatever. So I'm very grateful that I'm here and I'm still coming. And I'm practicing. And then I think it's about being in mindfulness and practicing every single day. And to know what you just said is that I'm okay. And I'm okay with the fact that I'm okay. And that is good enough for me.
Yeah.
And then be mindful of the fact that I'm good enough.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for saying it. That, I mean, that is, of course you're good. We're all good enough. How could we not be? You know, it has to be a fabricated belief for me to think that I'm somehow less than someone else or somehow inadequate for human life. The proof is, here I am. I'm having it. You know, it's only by weighing it in a competitive way against something that I fabricated myself that I could in any way think that I'm inadequate. But That's a common human problem too. And your words are just words, mm-hmm. but authentic Dhamma practice, ahipasiko, means we take those words and we make them alive within ourselves, and you're doing it. You know, good for you. Is that Frank behind you there?
Yes.
Let's go around that way. I want to, that that's some of those rascals in the back row. I want to get to them quickly. So
good to be here tonight.
Hey, Frank.
The teachings on dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates, you know, when you speak about it, it seems to be the most confusing thing in the world to grasp and understand. And it's not until you really can understand what the five clinging aggregates are from personal experience in relation to how it even manifests. Like, so that five clinging aggregates that constitutes a self, which we feel is a self, it manifests from that place of dependent yeah. origination.
Yep, yep.
We need the ignorance. We need the not understanding. We need the not self characteristic person. You know, we just, it's hard to explain. It's like you don't know, and that's the not knowing is what causes the attachments and the suffering. And it's not until you can identify in yourself the form, the feeling, the perception, the mental fabrications, and how that all feeds into this sixth sense of conscious mind, and how it originates in craving and clinging. It's really, for me, is where it originated from. And I didn't know that it was from ignorance. I just knew that the clinging and craving was there.
Yeah.
And I felt like when this all started to come together for me, and where I could at least understand a little bit, it was dependent on the quality of my mind. And that quality of mind was always rooted in the hindrance. It was rooted in greed. It was rooted in anger. It was rooted in ill will towards other people. And then once I started to understand where it was all rooted in, it all started to fall apart.
You mean that?
And it's just so hard to explain that in words. It's, you know, so I encourage anybody who doesn't understand it to read the chapter and to listen to tapes and try to really dig into, you know, where it manifests in yourself. Because that's like the key for me. That was the key for me. I don't know if that made any sense.
It made perfect sense, Frank, and that what is craving and clinging, to understand that craving and clinging originates in ignorance is, again, you can say this a few different ways, but that's the essence of the Dhamma too, because that points in the right direction. It doesn't overlook or dismiss that single most important truth, that it's ignorance of Four Noble Truths that cause all this. That is the reason for Dhamma practice. It's the reason for Buddhism, for authentic Buddhism, is to resolve that problem of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And because of ignorance, because I don't understand who I am, I crave for more of me. Once I understand who I am, there could be no craving.
And if I just might say one more thing about that, not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, is maintaining the quality of mind. So like the four foundations, and it starts in meditation, and those instructions of understanding thoughts as they arise, come back to the breath. Feelings, come back to the breath. Quality of mind, come back to the breath. Off the cushion, throughout your day, when you're mindful of the quality of your mind, that takes you right back to wanting to understand where that anger and greed comes from.
Yeah.
And once it's found to be in ignorance, I kind of wanted to know why I was so ignorant when I understood the teachings and I could comprehend it. But yet, what do? Something had to be done besides just understanding. And that was where the Eightfold Path came in. I had to set an intention to abandon the anger, the greed, and the ill will.
Yeah. You took action, which is what karma means. You took a direct action to counter the karma you had developed, the momentum of your past actions. It's just what you did. Thank you. Eric, how are you?
Good.
I think Eric's back there. I'm good. I was just kind of guessing you were back there. But
I think I'm just going to listen to that. I had appreciated what everyone had to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you're here, Eric. Bill?
John? I think I'm also just going to listen tonight. Actually, I have a question. Do you ever cover your other book, The Spiritual Solution, in here?
No.
No.
But I'm happy to talk about it anytime you want.
Okay.
So, yeah, just send me an email, give me a call.
Cool.
My card's over there with my phone number on it. So, yeah, I look forward to talking to you about it.
Awesome.
Yeah,
thanks.
Good. Thank you. How is your meditation practice going?
Today?
In general, but yeah, today.
Between last week and this week, I sat down 3 of the 6 days, seven days.
Good for you.
Since last week, so that was... We were plus 3 for the week.
Good.
So that was nice. I do 10 minutes by myself in the morning. And it's so strange how there's an avoidance to it. It's the easiest, it seems like the easiest thing to do is do nothing.
Yep.
But, man, it's... My mind wants to avoid it at all costs.
Really? Has anybody else had aversion to
everyone.
But tonight, I don't know what the causation or correlation is or what, but tonight I noticed that my 20 minutes that we did tonight was very, very peaceful and just quiet. It was pretty easy to stay focused on my breath tonight.
Thank you. There is a dynamic from that develops meditating in a group that just seems to make it better or easier or something like that. But I never question it. But I look forward to... I meditate twice a day every day for 30 minutes, and I look forward to meditating with the group. It's just something different. So the time you're doing is great. 10 minutes is plenty. I wouldn't add any more time until you get into a routine of meditating twice a day every day. And in fact, if it made it easier for you to do that, I would say cut back to 5 minutes, 2 5-minute sessions.
Okay.
And you'll find that doing that on a regular basis, pretty soon you'll be meditating for 20 minutes without too much thought. But that's the most important thing. And keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great. So thank you, Bill.
Thanks, John.
Mike. Is it Mike or Michael? Do you prefer?
Mike and Michael, whichever you prefer.
Okay, Mickey.
Okay. To be honest, I definitely got lost in some of the interconnectedness and the just like a mumble jumble of words.
But, yeah.
I could certainly see what we were driving at, I suppose. I love the idea of that, I by myself and whole, and that I don't need things or material things or relationships and whatnot. I think a lot of people get caught up in the whole like you complete me
thing,
and like that's unhealthy.
It's incredibly unhealthy.
Upon people, it's better when you're an independent person. Overall, I really enjoyed it. Meditation was good. Do have some unfortunate news. I have a Tuesday commitment starting next week. It's probably gonna run for like 3 months. Saturdays are tough, so you will not be seeing me for a little bit, but hopefully, I shall return at some point. See what happens.
Yeah.
Well, I thank all you guys. All been very lovely and grateful and very what's the word I'm looking for? Friendly and welcoming. Welcoming, right? Yeah, it's hospitable. And hopefully this should not be the last time we see each other.
Yeah, I hope not. And you can join online too or catch up with it.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a full commitment, so no computer, nothing.
It's nice to meet you. I hope to see you again in a few minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
Good. Hey, Russ.
John, I'm just happy to be here, and I'll do Noble Silence.
I'm glad you're here. Hello, Michael.
Noble Silence.
Hello, Julia.
Oh, thank you, John, for your teaching. I'm going to pass also.
Glad you're here. Thank you. Hello, Kate.
Hello. Noble Silence for me, too.
I'm glad you're here. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
A lot of noble silence, but depends on origination. What a surprise. I really want to, but I have to just say something. Yeah, so this is to expand on what Frank was talking about, I can relate, because that's that interconnectedness of the whole Dhamma.
There's no interconnectedness in the Dhamma.
Comes right to the dependent origination, all in there. And, you know, it begins with the ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. And then you go down that list of the five, you know, the aggregates of the fabrications of the consciousness, name and form, the sixth sense space, the whole, that's part of the dependent origination. It's all, it's in there. And I came to the realization that what it really is describing is the formation of the ego. So something that, surprise, surprise, I've been mentioning for the last 3 months, with discernment and disenchantment with those forms and with those entities of dependent origination comes dispassion. And with that dispassion comes release of that ego. And from that, I don't aspire, or I don't, it's not an identifying goal to be enlightened. It's a goal to live my present life in the moment with understanding. So when that situation arises at work or anywhere, and there's that reaction, and I think you said it, John, and it was something I was searching for a long time ago, to observe yourself in that moment, almost taking yourself away and observing yourself, what is the right way to respond to this potentially ego self-referential reaction that's going to cause this whole causative link of dependent origination that will result in becoming birth and death and pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I am now with dependent origination, which is a lot further where I was last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to have more of an understanding with it through this class that we've been having and through the Sangha discussion. But it's an ongoing thing because it happens every moment of birth.
Yep.
And it could happen quite often, but through mindfulness and concentration, the things that we've talked about the last weeks, we can develop the skill to be able to practice that Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
So I know it's long-winded. Normally I'm not that long-winded, but that's kind of like where I am with dependent origination. And those aggregates too, you know, that whole ego thing. So I'm very grateful for everybody's input and the class. And so thank you.
Thank you. It's becoming more clear is what you're saying.
And
I think after next week in the five clinging aggregates, it'll bring a little bit more insight into it. But it really isn't all that difficult, but because it describes something that we fabricated ourselves, it's very hard to see how it fits because we're trying to fit a reality to something that is fabricated. It's enough to just understand that I'm ignorant of the way things are, and because of that ignorance, I've created stress and suffering. And we can get caught up in the 12 links and where they are and mm-hmm. how they come about. The time frame between ignorance being present and stress arising is outside of time. It's not something we can track in most cases from beginning, you know, this happened. Oh, and we ended up here. It just happens. It happens outside of time. It happens outside of person. It just happens. And it happens with one thought. And if that thought is rooted in ignorance, it produces another ignorant thought. But one clear thought, one thought rooted in reality, one thought framed by the Eightfold Path begins to diminish that. And that's what you're describing. Yes. So thank you. Hello, Helen.
Hello, John. Hello, everybody. It's good to be here. Mm-hmm. I agree. It takes time to unravel this. I always say it's like peeling an onion and sometimes you cry. But each time you go deeper, you do understand more, or it becomes clearer. And one of the things that I really like about this is that it's non-punitive. You learn something new and it's or you get a little further. Or, you know, when I look at the whole dependent origination chain, I realize that pretty much when I get to mental fabrications and realize that's where I am, I can cut the chain at that point. Because that, I guess for me, that's, you know, when you get to the point where you're in a story in your head or you're having a conversation and there's nobody there, you kind of realize you're in the mental fabrication mode, and you can, you know, just like, what is it? Staples has that was easy button. Mm. You know, you just go for it. That was easy. Okay, I'm out. And then the other thing I was thinking about was like the five clinging aggregates. You can think about them as the clinging aggregates, but if you have right view, you know, they're also positive attributes. You know, that it's how you view, you know, having an understanding, a true understanding of form, a skillful understanding of your feelings and the appropriateness of your feelings. Your perception is your right view, your right intention, mental fabrications. Once you recognize them, you know, you can just, you know, laugh them off, you know, if they're way down the road and there is no road, you know, and you just get back to just a skillful perception of what is. And, you know, it's like you say, at any given moment, you can sort of claim that moment. You can say, I'm here and I can make this decision, or I can say this. You know, it's, you have that moment, you own it. So it's your choice what you do with it.
That's, it's our, in each and every moment, it's our choice what we're going to do with it.
Yeah.
And so we can continue to incline our minds towards awakening, or we can play around in ignorance a little bit longer. Thank you, Helen. Hello, David.
Hey, John. Thank you.
Glad you're here. Matthew.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Good to be here. I like listening to what everyone said tonight, and particularly that this teaching, Dependent Origination, contains the Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, Five Clinging Aggregates, all those things, the Three Marks of Existence. So, if we look at our direct experience, we start with name and form, we go into the sixth sense base. Now we're talking about our direct experience. Ear consciousness, eye consciousness, nose consciousness, blah, 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 consciousness. So now we're coming into a body that can now be in contact with phenomena through the sixth sense base. From contact comes feeling. So when we interact with the world through our senses, name and form has a experience with it. And name and form has developed preferences, likes and dislikes, attitudes, ideas, which we're going to call fabrications, and a resulting consciousness that holds those and directs those preferences towards life and frames it as, this is me, this is mine. So from contact comes feeling. So now we're in our direct experience. What's occurring? From feeling comes craving. So craving is anatta, though now we're into the three marks of existence. So anatta is what is craving the... how do I say it? I guess personalization of feelings. So this feeling is happening to me. I'm feeling whatever. So from craving, from feeling, from contact comes feeling, from feeling comes craving, from craving comes clinging and maintaining. So again, we're going to jump into three marks of existence. Contact, moment. Feeling, moment. Craving, moment. Clinging and maintaining, moment. This is happening in within impermanence. These things are arising and passing away all the time on their own. It requires anatta. It requires the fabricated coordination of these aggregates to experience something happening to me when really it's just going poof, poof, poof. It's gone. It's gone. It's gone.
But it requires ignorance to continue.
Absolutely. That's what starts it. Right? So that's just a little riffing on that. So
yeah. Thank you, Matt. Matt will be teaching the Saturday class in a week from Saturday, followed by a Qigong class. So it's a good Saturday to come up. Thank you. Hello, Lorna.
Hi there. I don't think I have anything to say tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, Rob.
I'm going to have to pass too.
I'm glad you're here.
I'm not quite here.
Well, like there's going to be another talk on dependent origination Saturday. Again, so if you can't be here, try to listen to it. It's an important teaching, but it really isn't all that difficult. Ignorance of Four Noble Truths is the issue. Developing understanding of Four Noble Truths is the understanding that we gain through Dhamma practice. And the Four Noble Truths simply describe human life. So we're gaining an understanding of human life. It's a pretty good thing to have when you're having a human life to understand it, isn't it? So we'll finish with metta as we always do. It's nice to have Frank and Eric and the guys here for metta. So again, find your relaxed meditation posture and take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. peace.